This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 199 for Wednesday, July 6th, 2016. Try saying that five times fast. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover all kinds of stuff, sometimes video games, not often, but sometimes movies, TV. If you'd like to hear more of that, then you should buckle up and join me and my guest tonight, Hammond Chamberlain, from Beyond the Playlist and the upcoming Soundography. Welcome back, sir.
Hello, how are you?
Doing great. It's been a little while because we had a few guests in between the Game of Thrones episode that you were on, and then, of course, the first of the month as per usual. So,
yeah, no, I love coming in the first of the month, and I kind of wish that I'd been around for the last episode of Game of Thrones because I predicted that last scene almost to a T.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was it was such a fun episode with Kristen, and it was such a great double episode ender to the season. Like, I think that it was super, super fun. And I had a great time with John Jagger talking about episode 9. So for those that might have missed it, basically because I was late posting them too, because I've been so busy. But if you go back and listen to the last two episodes of the Citadel Cafe, then I think you'll find you'll really enjoy the Game of Thrones talk that we had. It was cool to get some fresh people that have never been on the show before. Like a lot of my Game of Thrones guests are, of course, you guys like you and Lou and Brockett, but then also some regulars like Paul Fox and some other folks that have been on the Game of Thrones chats before, Adam Christensen, those guys. But it's always fun to try and get some new people in because, I mean, you and I know so many podcasters, and every one of us is watching Game of Thrones and just champing at the bit. Like, can I talk about it now? Is it loud? Can I talk? It's like, have you seen it? How far are you? You know, like there's that constant check. I have to be careful because I don't want to get into any spoilers, because I know there are some of our listeners on the Citadel Cafe that have had to tune out halfway through the show for the last 10 weeks because they are either not caught up, currently watching the series for the first time. Our chat room regular, Alistair, is on episode 2 or 3 of season 4. So like he's, you know, halfway through, but like still we can't talk about stuff. So it's one of those things where I'm happy to kind of, it's nice because we don't have to worry about what we're talking about for 10 weeks, but it's also now daunting. And I was like, oh crap, now I have to figure out what else I'm going to talk about. And now I'm back to having to bring something to the table all the time, as opposed to just having like an auto in. And that's the other great thing about bringing on new guests, of course, is that you get, it's like, hey, you're new to the show, tell us about you, and then you can spend 20 minutes talking about what they're interested in.
That's always good.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna do like an Etch-a-Sketch thing and like, so Hammond, what's new with you? What do you do on the internet?
Well, let's see, what have I been up to? I've fixed our sprinklers.
Ooh,
this okay. week we had a leaky area, and I changed a bunch of heads, and that didn't work. And then I went and changed the top of a valve, and that seems to have rectified the problem. Hmm. And then yesterday after dinner, my right eye started to just burn, and I had no idea what's going on. And so I took a bunch of Benadryl and some pain stuff and then went to bed. And this morning it still didn't feel great, so I went and got some allergy drops and rested, and it seems to be feeling a little bit better. But I really hate allergies because it doesn't hit me often, but when it does, it just makes my life miserable.
Like a truck. Yeah. It's funny, actually. I saw my parents yesterday, and my mother has been dealing with something for weeks, to the point where she went to the doctor thinking that she had a sinus infection. Mm-hmm. And she didn't. It just is allergies, but she's just, you know, having a hard time trying to find the right combination, the right kind of antihistamine that'll work for her and not, you know, make her feel lethargic and all that kind of stuff. Or dry her out. That's the biggest problem, because I've got cat allergies. So if I, you know, I'm traveling, and if I stay in any house, you know, friends' places that have a cat, then I have to basically drug myself constantly. And then I die because I'm so thirsty all the time, because of the antihistamines that I have to be, you know, taking basically like 24 hours, you know, a day. And it's tough. And I've noticed lately, I don't know if it's allergies. I think it's just because I've now switched and have to have fans going a lot in my studio. I find that my eyes have been drying out a lot. So I have to kind of up the water intake, and I mean, all things that we should do anyway, right? Like, just, it's a nice reminder. So do you know what you're allergic to?
I know I had some allergy testing done 4 or 5 years ago, and I know I am severely allergic to grass. That's the one thing I know for sure.
It's a good thing the planet isn't covered in that.
Yeah, especially, and the one job I have in the yard is to mow. So
yeah.
That's some perverse joke that my wife has pulled on me. So, but yeah, I know it's grass. So I'm sure there's some other things. I know that there was a couple years ago, there was a lady I came in after. I used to work in a 24-hour facility, and then we'd just kind of tap out and take over. So we'd use the same workstations. And she had been wearing some perfume that made my eyeballs swell completely shut. Like, I thought I was going blind. And after a few doses of Benadryl and some cold compresses, I was better, but whatever that perfume was or whatever she had had on had caused me a major, major reaction.
Mm. Yeah, you have to be careful these days with scents too. I mean, like I wear deodorant, but that's, I never wear cologne or aftershave. It's never really been my thing, but I've certainly been in the presence of people that have put on too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say I have an allergic reaction to it, or any kind of respiratory problem, but I find it really disturbing. Off-putting. Yeah. Yeah. I've got some friends that will get like instant headaches, you know, like just like that kind of strong smell really bothers them.
Yeah.
But it's tough when you've got sensitivities and allergies. Something that I've been noticing a lot, I took some time, this weekend just cause, well, I mean, you guys had a holiday, of course, just the other day. And then Canada Day was last week on Friday, and I was out for the afternoon. I took a half day. And it's one of those days where in Halifax, like, there's just a lot of people out. Like, the waterfront is packed full of people. There's lots of cool free things to do for families, and bars and patios are of course busy because everybody's got the day off. And here it was beautiful. It was one of the first really nice days we've had in a long time, or really nice weeks, I should say. And I noticed an awful lot of people walking around with environmental masks on. And normally I don't really notice much. You see the odd, you know, the odd person on the bus from time to time that has like a little white mask on. I've seen some people that have them dangling around their necks, but I usually assume those people are like construction workers, like given their getup, like they're usually wearing construction boots. And that, so you're thinking, okay, well, it's a dust mask for whatever they were doing, you know, 10 minutes ago. But what really grabbed me is the number of people that are using these environmental masks, but also the people that have them that are basically styled like Mad Max.
Oh, yes.
So I like, it's not only do they have these things on, and yeah, okay, I agree. If I had to wear one, I wouldn't necessarily want to wear like a white and blue medical looking.
Oh, so you're an artist. So you'd gussy yours up every day to be something.
Yeah. Like maybe,
interesting. You
know, now I'm not saying that these guys had spikes on them or anything like that. It's not like it was anything, crazy, but it's, I mean, whatever filters or whatever special apparatus are included, they were chrome or silver, and then the rest of the thing was black. It's pretty intimidating, no matter how, like, and funny enough, the people that are wearing these things are probably the least intimidating in terms of their stature and their posture and everything else. They're not healthy people, apparently. They tend to be slouched over, you know, usually have a bunch of stuff with them. Like, they don't look threatening, but when you catch them out of the corner of your eye, like, you're the sci-fi brain in me kind of goes, what? Like, why? Oh, right. Okay. Never mind. It's an environmental thing. I find it strange, you know, but I mean, if I had an opportunity, I shouldn't say opportunity. If I was in an unfortunate situation where I had lost a limb, or if I had to have some sort of prosthetic, I don't know whether I would bother to like try to find one that would be like super realistic looking, or whether I would go like, screw it, I'm just going to contact our buddy Bill Duran and say like, so Bill,
build me an arm.
Yeah.
And make it look like, I don't know, a Terminator's exoskeleton. Have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, throw in little fire engine red and gold plating for good measure, you know?
Yeah.
Like just, I'm not making jest of people that have lost limbs, but I feel like there'd be an opportunity to potentially have a higher functioning limb than a regular
or
one.
Or even something that when people notice it, there's always that awkward, are they going to ask? Are they not going to ask about what happened? So if you do something that is artsy with it or something that's creative with it, that awkwardness is kind of gone because you're actually asking people to ask about it to kind of help break the ice and remove the awkwardness of it.
Yeah. It's like when people, you know, if you see someone that has a cast on their arm and it's like a bright purple fiberglass cast and there's writing all over it and stickers and stuff like that, you'd be more likely to ask them about the cast itself as opposed to how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I mean, I remember talking about this a long time ago. I think it was on Forecast. My prediction was about, you know, 3D printing and prosthetic limbs kind of catching up with one another.
Well, going back to smells, when Stacy was in New York with the girls, they went to go see The Lion King on Broadway.
Oh, cool.
And they were sitting there, and this family sat in front of them. And as Stacy leaned forward to get something out of her purse, she was overwhelmed with this horrible, horrible odor of BO. And it was a combination of BO and something else, because she actually started smelling the kids to see if it was them or her or, you know, what was causing it. She realized very quickly it was a lady in front of her. Well, it was so bad that she actually reached into her bag and pulled out one of those little snack things of Pringles and was taking sniffs off of it throughout the show.
Oh my God.
To mitigate the smell of the person in front of her.
Wow.
And anytime she would move, it would cause this, you know, burst of air and it would, you know, fall back on her. So she was sharing the sniffing of the Pringles can with people around, like my mother-in-law and my daughters, so they could deal with it. Then at intermission, she moved to a different seat, like the other end of their party or whatever, and they were gone. And it was better. But she said for the first act, it was pretty unbearable, and so unbearable that she was taking, she was vaping off of a Pringles box.
That's intense. Yeah, that's intense. I mean, I am when I'm working out. Like, I mean, if I'm out for a run or something like that, then yeah, I mean, I sweaty.
But that's understandable. When you're sitting at a darkened theater, well, you're not supposed to smell that way.
No, but I mean, also, I, you know, I'm a pretty big guy, so I tend to sweat. Like, even if I'm just walking over to go to the park or something like that, because I walk everywhere I go, I don't have a car, I'm busing and walking. Like, sometimes the buses are just hot, you know, if they don't have AC on. So I get sweaty no matter where I go in the summertime. So I can sympathize with people that.
I understand how it happened, but it's still something that was, you know, they'd been out all day and we're not suffering from the same.
Yeah.
Malady as this person was.
The other person might not be aware of it too.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it sucks when that kind of stuff happens in movie theaters or, you know, sporting events or like stuff where you want to sit and enjoy a thing and then whatever's happening around you is taking you out of the experience. Mm-hmm. Like, you're supposed to be having an experience that is not, you know, just sitting in a chair. Like, you're supposed to be transported somewhere else, you know, through your imagination and all that kind of stuff. I actually find the flavored popcorn phenomenon very disturbing in movie theaters. Like a Pringles can would be like a nice normal. Like, oh yeah, okay, somebody opened up a bottle of Pringles, that's fun. But like when people come in with like dill pickle powder, they've either put on so much or they're putting it on in the theater. It drives me crazy because you expect to smell popcorn, you expect to smell maybe some potato chips. You can't really smell M&Ms unless you're really on top of them. So like you're
what are you doing with M&Ms where you're on top of them?
Well, you know what I mean, like you're you're holding them. When you open up a bag of M&Ms, there's a smell.
Yes,
I'm trying to balance on the red M&Ms. The red ones are the only ones that hold my weight, little known fact. But the popcorn flavors are not normal movie theater smells that we have been conditioned to accept.
It's like the popcorn flavored Jelly Bellies are such a brain disconnect. It's almost hard for me to eat them.
Right. Yeah.
Like because the textures don't match.
Yeah. You're chewing on a gummy worm, but you're tasting popcorn. Like, yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't understand chip flavors either. It's like, hey, here's pizza flavored chips. No. I don't know. Here's fish and chips flavored chips. Wait, what? Like, I just, the things that I see on the supermarket shelves these days is just like, no, I do not want to try that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I had a cheeseburger pizza one time and it was disgusting. Like, you bite into a pizza and you're thinking cheeseburger pizza. Like, sure. Yeah. You know, hamburger and the kinds of things that would be on a hamburger, but on a pizza. No, they had like relish and ketchup and mustard in the pizza. So like it tasted like a cheeseburger, which after a second you're like, okay, yeah, I get it. So it's like someone made a cheeseburger, ground it up and then put it in a different format and then fed it to you. Like, there's this weird disconnect in like how you're used to things. And I don't get it. Don't try cheeseburger pizza.
We actually went to the rodeo on the 4th of July and I had a pizza cone. So it's a cone of pizza dough with all the pizza stuff crammed in the cone and then heated or fried, or I don't know how they prepared it. But anyway, all I can tell you is that it wasn't good.
Yeah, I would imagine
all the
rodeo
all
food
the grease from the cheese
miss.
Were down at the all the grease from the cheese was down in the little cup at the bottom of the cone. So
gross.
That was, at least it had a nice receptacle that I didn't have to eat.
Oh God.
But it was just, you take the worst, like a Chuck E. Cheese $5 cardboard pizza, make it a cone and hand it to somebody. That's kind of what this was.
Yeah, I can tell you right now how to make a pizza cone. Just make a really large pizza and sell your slices and then roll them up and give them to people. Like, I've seen people eat pizza like that all the time.
Yeah. It's funny. You know, there are people who fold their pizzas in half and then eat them. That's their slices. Yep. That's the way I do it. And
yeah, my roommate's boyfriend in university, Jason, he was trying to trim down for football. So he worked at the pizzeria. So it was kind of difficult not to eat pizza because we had it so cheap and he was able to just make whatever he wanted and bring it home. I don't even know if he had to pay for it. If he did, it wasn't very much. But because he was trying to, it was a low fat diet, he would skip the cheese. So he would have pizza, but without the cheese on it, which I would argue is not pizza, but he would get extra toppings and everything else. But in order to eat it, he had to roll it up.
To
hold the stuff on. Yeah, otherwise it would just be impossible to eat.
Yeah, see, I get my pizza with light cheese. So it's as little cheese as possible for them to put on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't specify. I'm a creature of habit. When I order pizza from a local pizzeria, it's usually Leo's Pizza down on Waverly Road. Not that it matters to anybody else that's listening that doesn't live in Dartmouth, but
local call out.
Yeah. Woo! Well, hey, right. I mean, like, you know, small business, why not? Right. Well, here's the thing. They are over in Waverly, which is probably about a 10 to 15 minute drive. When I order, they say 45 minutes. It's always here in 20 to 30. It arrives hot. Like sometimes when they hand it to me, I kind of can't hold the bottom of the box. So, and it's great pizza, but I just order the works. So like, I don't get into special cheeses and stuff like that. I just like, yep, I want your works special, whatever it is, Friday night.
I would like it with aged Gouda.
Oh, yeah.
And Havarti.
Yeah. Actually, I do really like feta on pizza.
Feta. We actually, in our house, we have the phrase, things are better with feta.
Ah, yes. I would agree. Have you ever had goat cheese on pizza?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's also very good.
Speaking of eating, the other night we made this pork roast and it was very, very good. But as Sydney, who has been a guest on the show, was eating, she's complaining about how the meat was chewy. And so Stacy kept saying, you know what? You said everything, fish, beef, hamburgers. You said everything has been chewy for like the last 2 weeks. You've been saying everything's chewy. And I said, look, we're not eating a Wookiee. Stop calling things chewy. And so then the rule went out. If we're not, the only time you can say something is chewy is if we're ever eating Wookiee meat. So stop. So that turned into a big joke throughout the rest of the night.
I read that on Facebook earlier. And it was just like, and the only thing that went through my head was like, did the kids hurt themselves rolling their eyes when you said that? Like, were there any eye injuries?
No, actually, it was responded to very well. All four of us were actually laughing pretty hard. So
that's because it's a pretty good joke.
Yeah,
pretty good dad joke. I mean, that's Yeah, I'd imagine at some point there was like, Dad.
No. No. No, because Stacy joined in. If it'd just been me,
right,
then it probably would have been. But because Stacy joined in, it turned into a far lighter family joke instead of just a, what the heck?
Yeah.
Dad and his geeky references.
Yeah.
Also, it goes to show that I've done well raising my kids because they understood the reference.
They got the joke, yeah. No, if they didn't, if it's like, you didn't get that joke, you're grounded.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I've told them. Yeah. I've told Sydney and Audrey that I'm not going to make them watch the 1 through 3 of Star Wars unless they're grounded. Nice.
Yeah. How is the podcast going for the for Sydney?
She actually stopped doing it. She right around the end of the school year, she just was too busy and she was going out of town, and she wasn't able to get friends on as often as she'd like to, and talking to herself in a microphone was kind of not what she was looking for.
No, and I would argue that's hard for any podcaster.
So she ended it, and we saved all the episodes, and if we want to, we can stick them up on like archive.org or something like that for people to find. But
and she might find that in the school year that it'd be, once everybody's schedule gets back to normal, then it, you know, she
could always
revisit.
And Audrey's getting to an age. I mean, Audrey will be, you know, 7 and a half now. So when she's, you know, 8 during the school year, if she and Sydney want to start up with something else where it's the two of them, they could talk about movies and all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah, of course.
I don't think she hates the concept of doing something else. I just think that that particular show, she had to kind of get under her belt to kind of see what she was doing.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, we all have them. I mean, like I used to do bits and pieces for, StarCast. I used to do the Dating Digital podcast. I've thought about bringing DDP back because despite having not produced an episode for like 4 years or more, I still get people inquiring about like where they can find it and are the archives up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
Not a lot, but every once in a while I'll get an email. I certainly still get a lot of downloads on episode 30, just because that's the when people subscribe on iTunes, they download the latest. So I still get a message in my inbox along with the data for Citadel Cafe, you know, saying, hey, also DDP episode 30 has got, you know, X amount of downloads. And it's not high, but it's more than I expect for a show that's been over for 4 years, right?
Well, it's interesting because I'm still doing my first show. It's still alive and kicking. And I'm actually going to rapidly approach 200 here pretty soon. So
you and me both.
Yeah. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. You and I were discussing a little bit of pre-show about potentially having you and Lou and Brockett all on next week, which is a good idea, I think, for episode 200. I'd like to have you guys on. But I'm also curious, just if anybody is vocal enough and you want to let me know what you would like to do or have us do on episode 200 of the Citadel Cafe.
I'll throw in the caveat within reason because I'm not singing.
Yes. No, a type of spoken podcast that you would enjoy. what would you like to see happen? Shoot me an email at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or just find me on Twitter at Joel Duggan and ask me or shoot me some ideas because I'd be curious to see what's up because we've got the Slack chat now and they might have some ideas. I'm going to I should speak to them during the week too and see if anybody has any thoughts.
Yeah, drop some suggestions in there or drop the idea in there. I'm sure we'd have some feedback come out from that.
Yeah. Actually, usually it's around now because Game of Thrones ends near the holiday weekend for Canada Day and Independence Day in the States. I often take a couple of weeks off or sometimes even the summer off from the Citadel Cafe. But I've been having fun with it. We've been rapidly approaching episode 200, so it seemed like a dumb time to bail.
Yeah.
Starting next season with like, you know, episode 199. It feels a little bit like a lackluster. I probably will still try to take a vacation later on this summer, but it'll be like the regular, just a 2 week kind of hiatus just to kind of give my brain a break. Cause we run into the same problems too with, Comics Coast to Coast. It's very difficult to find guests that are available when I've been putting out emails as normal, but I've not been getting a lot of responses, or been getting a lot of yeses, but like yeses, but I'm traveling it's difficult for me to find the right Thursday because now that the kids are out of school, et cetera, et cetera. So it depends on who we're talking to. Like, it might be a good time for me to potentially start, you know, messaging artists that are kind of in their early 20s and probably don't have kids.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
If I can't get some people that have a little bit more of a flexible schedule on the show, but yeah, it's been interesting. Actually, speaking of podcasts, I was just on Webcomics Alliance last night.
Yeah, I saw you tweeting about that. How'd that go?
Good. It was very, very nice. Robin and Don were there. Robin had a lot of really good questions. It was actually a really well thought out interview. There was a lot of publishing questions. So, I mean, Piper got to say her piece and tell her story, which was good. But there was a lot of Forge related questions. So that was cool for me to respond to. We're going to flip the tables, tomorrow night on Comics Coast to Coast. Piper's our guest tomorrow as well. And that's going to be more Piper focused.
Yeah. And now I sent out to Brian the files for the Artist Roundtable so that he and Matt and could put up the Artist Roundtable on the Comics Coast to Coast site too.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Because they were such a integral part in having that be successful this year.
Oh, cool. Yeah. No, that's awesome. I'm interested to talk to them about it. I'm interested to have a focused podcast with Piper as well. I for those of you that have been following me on social media or following Forge and Piper's Kickstarter that we're working together on, we officially hit 50% yesterday or the day before. I've lost track. but we're 50% financially towards our goal. We're hovering, for the sake of argument, we've got about 350 backers and $28,000 raised out of the 53 that we need. The number I don't like is the 16 days to go. the last time I remember looking at that, it was around 22. And this week has just been a blur. I mean, I've been doing some behind the scenes work, working very hard on announcing some stretch goals with Piper. But right now, I'm just looking at like the regular flow of backers and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it's exciting, but we're in this middle part. And that's why we're doing podcasts and some promotional stuff and trying to get the word out there. But so far we've had quite a few people, like to the point where I have lost count, that have said things like, "Oh my gosh, I've been waiting so long for this. Thank you, Piper, for making a book. I love your art. It's so cute. It's adorable." Piper's been doing some Pokemon, redesigns lately, which always get a lot of attention because Pokemon's really popular, and Piper is, as per usual, knocking it out of the park. Her Charmander and Squirtle stuff was just hilarious. Like, she totally takes a ginormous leap on what the design should be and makes them her own. It's been super fun to watch. And I just, you know, just before the show, she posted a behind the scenes shot. It's like a cell phone picture of her drawing on her Cintiq. And she's working on today's daily. It looks like it might be Goldfish. So be interesting to see where that goes. But yeah, it's so far the Kickstarter has been really well received. The interview on Tuesday night was great. I don't think we have any other interviews lined up. There's, Piper has got a written interview, for, oh gosh, I'm blanking on his name. His name is Sean and he runs a show. It's the Moo Podcast Network. Oh gosh, Sean, I'm really sorry. Had so much information bounce around in my head the last few days. But I will be tweeting that out on Forge Publishing, on Twitter, as well as my own personal one. So if you're looking for a written interview with Piper about her process and what she's up to, then you can check that out too. Yeah, I guess that's my mid-show kind of weekly Forge pitch. There's only a couple weeks left, I promise. Yeah. But speaking of Brian and Matt on Comics Coast to Coast, I got to be a fan and download and listen to the show that they did when I wasn't there. And what they did was they watched or started watching Voltron on Netflix. Yeah. And have you started watching that?
I did. Actually, I started watching it because it popped up on my Netflix, "Hey, you might be wanting to watch this," list. And so I marked it because I was a fan of the Lion Show when I was a kid. And I figured, okay, well, I'll watch it. And then I kind of forgot about it. Then somehow, I think it was on the Frog Pants Mega Feed, that one popped up. And it was about Voltron. So I decided I'd crack that open and listen to it. So after hearing them kind of go on and on about how good it is, I decided I'd go ahead and sit down and start watching. And I really liked it. There are some things about it that kind of drove me bonkers.
Yeah, I find a lot of kids programming these days, or cartoons these days, there is stuff that kind of gets to me, but I can often power through if it's a decent show.
And the other thing I really enjoyed was when they were being heroic and fighty and Voltron-y, that stuff was great. And when they were being like kids hanging out, that was good. It was that kind of in the middle where they were trying to be jokey or not jokey, but they weren't really, it wasn't the big story plots stuff.
Yeah.
That was the hard part I had when they were trying to like establish character or show something funny, like, and they do the exaggerated anime kind of responses from people where their mustaches go straight and their eyes get real big and they go boing, you know, that kind of stuff. That got old.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they had stayed more, I don't want to say real life, but more believable in their portrayal of, you know, of humor, because when they go too far, that's what drives me nuts about anime.
Mm-hmm.
It's when they go to that point where eyeballs do weird things and bodies, you know, do weird things, or they make strange expressions with their faces and it turns into something that you'd see like in a, you know,
Warner Brothers cartoon.
Exhibition or an Exorcism of Emily Rose movie or something where the faces get long and weird looking.
Yeah.
Because they're drawing a laugh. And
for whatever reason, Avatar was able to pull that off though. And I don't know quite how they did it. Like,
but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah. You know, now, no one twirled a mustache, I don't think, in Avatar. But like, if something happened, one of the comedic characters, like Sokka or even Aang, and they were young, like they were kids. So them being overdramatic and having big googly eyes because they see food and they're so hungry that they're drooling, like they could make this big, like kind of chibi face with great big eyes and things are glistening and there's drool coming down the side of their face. And then like in the next frame, pop, they go back to like their normal face.
Yeah.
They didn't do it so often that it was annoying. And that is something that almost no matter when it happens, I don't like it in anime either. But for whatever reason in Avatar, they pull it off. I don't know why. So good to know. I'll have to, it's good to know that because I would be quick to judge it if I didn't know that going in.
Yeah.
And they didn't mention that on Comics Coast to Coast.
And the other thing that was really good though, is they dealt with some of the storylines they dealt with when in the episodes were actually kind of sophisticated. They weren't real cut dry storylines, and the way they make the lions work is a little different than in the original show. And there was some real thought put in the way they told that story, and you could see the thought that went into the story. So I come away with it giving it a good, you know, solid 7-8 out of 10.
Well, that's pretty good, you know, considering that it's like a produced for Netflix and it's a kid's cartoon and like that kind of stuff. Yeah, very cool.
And I got to tell you, when they do the Voltron transformation and they do the stuff with the lions, that's awesome. I could have watched that all day.
Yeah. No, do they do the same thing they did in the 80s where they reuse the same animation over and over again?
They seem to have tapped into similar animation. I don't know if it was identical every time, but I know that there was a lot of things they did reuse. There might have been additions every time.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the technology available now is that, I mean, I'm assuming the lions are 3D. Like, I'm assuming they're CG, not hand-drawn mm-hmm. stuff. So rather than just reusing the same footage, you could animate Voltron coming together once, but you could animate the camera 100 different ways.
Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of maybe what they did a lot of the time.
Keeps it fresh.
But what's funny is they are aware enough about the show that they could make jokes. So, you know, in the old Voltron where they do the pie pieces and then show the faces of the drivers all like screaming or reacting or whatever. Yep. Well, at one point they're talking and they start showing the pieces and they all are nodding. And finally one of them goes, "Are we nodding? Is that what we're doing now? Are we nodding?" And I'm like, okay, I love the fact they are that aware of the trope that they can kind of poke fun of it.
Yeah. No, that's got a good sense of humor to it. Yeah. No, that's
and
that's
they
good.
Do that a couple times through the series where they kind of acknowledge the trope they're doing to let the people who are watching as adults know, okay, we know what we're doing is kind of silly, but we're on board too, but this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was well done.
Cool. It's on my list. I haven't been in a mood for a cartoon recently. I finished watching Gilmore Girls. It's been my meal break.
I am so proud of you.
Look, it's work related. I'm telling you that now. Because I was speaking with Brockett earlier this week, and he and I and his wife are looking to do a Biggest Fan podcast episode about Gilmore Girls. It's going to be two parts. They're talking about the series as it was on TV, and then when the new stuff comes out that they're doing for Netflix, we're going to get together and talk about that. I think it's just because my life has been pretty stressful lately. Not in a bad way, just in a busy way. And it's a pretty light show. It's a pretty silly show. There are things about it that are not fantastic. I mean, there are characters that get on my nerves. But for the most part, I find the upbeat pace of the show was a nice kind of escape and a nice way to relax.
That's the way I actually have very, very... Okay, so I have a friend of mine who refers to this, what I'm about to describe as cinematic nostalgia disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very, very fond memory of the Jessica Alba Fantastic Four, because it was this bright, colorful, light cartoon comic book movie that came out between Batman Begins and Sin City.
Yeah, and there was a Spider-Man in there somewhere too, but yeah.
And it was very light and not angsty. And I have this fond memory of it because it was just so different from these gritty, dark,
yeah,
kind of violent, angsty movies on either side of it.
Yeah, what DC is doing now, yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to fall for the Batman versus Superman Blu-ray?
Ooh, so there's a good question. So I've only seen Batman v Superman once.
Yep,
it was
me too.
In the theater. Yep. And I mean, we've talked about it on this show at length. I was on like three different podcasts talking about it. However, I might see if I could rent the director's cut, only because a second viewing would be worth it, at least to either cement my original opinions or potentially forgive, you know, some things. No matter what, I do enjoy Henry Cavill as Superman. Like, the writing for the character was terrible, but I still like his acting and all that kind of stuff. It was a decent action movie, but in terms of just like the cinematic experience of stuff blowing up. But I don't understand what could have possibly changed so much that you're seeing all this buzz on the internet about the nerds forgiving. Gosh, what's his name? Brian?
No. Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder. I was going to say Brian Singer, but no, Brian Singer's a director I like.
Except for I think he kind of dropped the ball on this last X-Men film.
So I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. My review of it is X-Meh.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. You know, I still haven't seen that either. That's something I'm going to have to rent. Again, just because I like the characters in it, I wouldn't necessarily go in there expecting a whole lot. Once you get into like the fourth and fifth of anything, I feel like you're kind of pushing your luck.
Well, there's a very knowing joke about the third X-Men movie in this X-Men movie, the newest one.
Oh, really?
And it's about the third one. It's specific. Well, you all know the third one in the series is the worst. It's a very knowing joke. But if you count up these newest ones, there's First Class, Days of Future Past, and this is the third one.
Yeah.
So it's kind of making a joke about itself too.
Oh yeah. No. Well done. So I don't know what Snyder could have done differently in the director's cut. And my argument would be, I understand that directors have bosses; they have to answer to producers, and the producers are the top of the money food chain. And that, you know, some decisions marketing-wise are made, you know, like, I doubt that Zack Snyder was pushing to have Batman and Superman on McDonald's cups. You know, like, I'm sure that there's some stuff there that was...
Or that cereal that came out.
Yes, yeah. Like, cereal boxes were not on his agenda. I'm sure of that.
Honey buckets of hope.
Yeah. but, I just, having seen the film, I can't see what added footage would do to change my mind.
I can give you the example of the Daredevil director's cut.
So I haven't seen that either.
With Ben Affleck in it.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, he's involved with both of these. Huh. the director's cut of that movie is far, far superior than the one that was released in the theater.
Mm.
I mean, it's on it's so much better that I actually bought the director's cut and had it for a while.
Yeah. So I enjoy the director's cut of Lord of the Rings better.
Yes.
But
not a Ben Affleck movie.
Yeah. No, not a Ben Affleck. Who would Ben Affleck play in the Lord of the Rings?
He'd have been the guy with all the bird poo in his hair.
That's awful. Oh, Radagast?
Yes.
He's in The Hobbit. That's not Lord of the Rings.
Actually, you know what he could have done? He could have been a voice for one of the imps.
Okay, yeah.
That's a pretty good voice. He could do a voice of an imp. Ants, what are they called? The giant trees.
Oh, ants, yeah. I was like imp? I was like a goblin, maybe? Yeah, no, Ben Affleck in full orc makeup would be pretty funny. Those movies didn't suck in theater. I mean, I saw those in theaters and I was like, whoa, blown away. And then I saw them at home on the extended DVDs and I was like, okay, this is even way better. But that's because they couldn't fit the books into the theaters and not have people sit there for 3.5 hours. So they said, well, all right, well, when you're sitting on your couch comfortably at home and you can hit the pause button and go up and take a bathroom break and get some more snacks, then that's when we'll put as much of this into the experience as we could, you know?
And the other thing was they weren't changing story as much as adding images or songs or things, just beats that didn't need to be there for the story. I mean, there's an image in the director's cut of Fellowship of the Rings where they're at the hilltop fighting the riders.
Weathertop, yep.
Yeah, Weathertop. And the fight's going on, but there's this up camera shot where the riders are kind of approaching and you're looking down on them. Mm-hmm. It's this very cool image of the riders moving through the mist, looking down. It's not in the theatrical cut.
Really?
But I'm glad it's in the director's cut because it creates part of the atmosphere and the ominous feeling of these things moving against them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's a short little thing, but it's there and I'm glad it's there and I had to see it. And that's the other part of it too, is he was removing to release in theaters. Peter Jackson and his editors were removing things that just didn't fit time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't good. It wasn't things that made the story better or worse.
Yeah.
It was time cuts.
Yeah. Can we find 50 or 60 30 second cuts that we can live without and get this thing down to 2 hours and 20 minutes or whatever?
The fact that they're restoring story beats to this Batman versus Superman trying to sell it, that's problematic because that means the story needed to be trimmed down in the writing process to make it fit better.
Well, and even then it's like, I don't know what you could do that's going to we still know the beginning, middle, and the end of this movie.
And also
it still ends the same. It still sucks. Yeah. Like, you know,
they still bond over a mom's name
and
then turn around and fight together after that. That in itself is my biggest problem with this movie, is you cannot turn from a fight for your own mortality to besties just based on someone's name.
No.
And spoiler alert, sorry.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think the internet's probably ruined it for enough people. all the people that were going to see it have seen it, I think. The other thing is you don't want them to end up making a call like in X-Men where it's like Lois Lane or even at the end there, Wonder Woman like looking at Bruce Wayne going, Martha, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's just, you know, it would make a funny YouTube video, but I can't see them changing anything that's going to make me think it's a good movie. Like, the thing. It was, forget who's in it and what it's about. It was just fundamentally a poorly told story. Yeah.
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 So what I've got kind of an excuse. Stacey never saw it. She's a little curious.
Oh, yeah.
The girls never saw it. I'm not sure if Audrey's going to be appropriate for it or not.
Yeah.
But Sydney's interested in it. So we might watch it some night.
The extended one?
Yeah. And that'll give me an excuse to see it and compare it with two people who've never seen it.
Yeah.
Which would also make kind of verify if I'm nuts or if it really is what I'm seeing.
Well, let me know. Spoiler free. Like, just say, hey, worth checking out.
And okay.
I might do it. Because I'm without this go-to thing of Gilmore Girls on Netflix, I'm now kind of like back into decision mode. Is like, what do I want to watch
when I have time to watch stuff? Do you like murder mysteries and kind of mysteries? Okay. Yeah. This slasher thing that I watched on Netflix, it's a Canadian-made show.
Okay.
It's a little bit violent, but I really enjoyed it. It was my elliptical show for 10 episodes.
Interesting. So you're telling me that Slasher is a violent show.
Oh yeah, and it's
who would have guessed?
it was really well done. It was a good story. They throw you a couple of red herrings that you kind of bite onto as bait, and when they kind of do the reveal, I was genuinely a little surprised. I mean, he was on my list as a suspect, but I still had my leanings elsewhere. And then when it was revealed, I'm like, oh wow, you kind of got me.
Yeah, right on. I like shows that surprise me, so I might check that out. I know that Bloodline season 2 is available, as is Marco Polo season 2. So, and those are both things.
Oh, Narco season 2, September 2nd.
Oh, cool. That's far away. Not as far away as Game of Thrones away. Season 7, though.
Yeah, but Narcos is so... If you haven't done it yet, do season 1 in preparation for season 2.
Of Narcos?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen season 1 of Narcos.
Okay,
I remember that quite firmly. Yeah, no, that show was not something you could do anything else and watch. Like, there was so much Spanish in the show. Like, you really had to stay on top of it.
I could play Hearthstone while watching it.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah.
No, My wife couldn't.
Yeah, no, I couldn't. I like shows that suck me into the point. Like Game of Thrones, my phone is nowhere near me when I watch that show. Like, I don't take breaks. There was definitely points in some of my episodes of watching Gilmore Girls where, what are their names? Liz and TJ. Luke Danes is the guy that owns the diner. And whenever Liz and TJ came on the screen, I just instinctively reached for my phone. I don't have time to check Twitter. Can't wait for these people to go away. Like, there's some characters there's some people in that show that are meant to annoy you. Like, they're meant to annoy a character that you like, so that in kind of parallel universes, they annoy you as well. And God, man, I guess tip of the hat to the actors, because it was like cheese graters on screen. Like, it's like, I can't deal. But yeah, so Bloodline season 2 is on my list. I haven't been in, like I said, Bloodline, great mystery, dark show. You know, like I haven't been in the mood for something that serious. So yeah, and I honestly haven't had a whole lot of time. Like last night we were podcasting until probably 11, and then I had a post call with Piper until 11:30 or so, and just, you know, it all kind of rolls forward.
Oh, and speaking of things you've been working on, the art that you've done. Mm-hmm. For a certain show that's upcoming is amazing.
Thank you. I was actually working on that all day. So so I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's going to be done sooner than later. I really hope I'm not holding you up. But I've got a lot. All the inks are done.
So we've recorded, not counting our kind of soft launch that we did with the pilot episode that was on the Kickstarter, and then a live appearance on the Wolf King Studios autism marathon.
Oh, cool.
We've done 4 episodes now.
Yikes. Without album art for me.
No, we haven't launched anything yet. We're just kind of backlogging them until everything's ready to go. We have all the rewards and all the art, and then we can kind of vomit it out on the internet from there.
Okay. You and I can talk about it after the show.
Okay.
But yes, that's happening too.
You're not holding us up at all. In fact, it's actually helping us kind of get a buffer.
Okay.
Well, because everyone's so busy.
Well, makes me feel really good, because one of the things that we discussed last night on the Webcomic Alliance podcast with, like, some of the lessons learned, you know, both by Piper and by me in terms of our Kickstarter process so far. And I knew that things were going to be busy, but I did not anticipate just how busy things are going to be with the Kickstarter. And on a very positive note, because I realize that I've been complaining an awful lot about how busy I have been. I really, really enjoy the work that I've been doing with Piper and the work on the Kickstarter and talking with fans and followers and answering questions and clarifying stuff. Like, I can sit down at the desk at like 10 a.m., ready to work for the day, start digging into some Kickstarter stuff, you know, throw in some Slack chat strategy in there with Dave and Piper, and, you know, maybe a Skype meeting with Piper for like a half an hour later in the day, some graphic design work, like all these kind of things all fall together, planning out our strategy for the next, you know, 3 or 4 days. And all of a sudden at 6 p.m. and I might have forgotten to have lunch. Like, it's something I have to be very careful of, because I will evaporate the day and go, crap, I was supposed to draw this today, and I was supposed to do all these other things. I'm happy that it's going that way, that it's not tedious, but it is not harder. It's more time consuming than I anticipated. But a lot of that is because of the positive reception. And you know, like when someone takes the time to write a really nice tweet about Piper, like you know, want to make sure that they get it, you know, retweeted and, you know, a thank you and all that kind of stuff, which is really, really cool.
Yep.
Yeah. But yes, no, I'm excited for all of the podcast things that are happening for you in the near future. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
And, yeah, I released an interview I did with the harmonica player from Bella Fleck. His name is Howard Levy. And the feedback that I've gotten on that one episode has surmounted all of the feedback I've gotten from all previous episodes combined.
Right on.
And I knew it was kind of a special episode when I was doing it, but I didn't realize just how much feedback I was going to get from it. It has been amazing what people have said about that show.
That's great. I mean, it's always great when you finally get enough of an audience that you start to get both the positive and negative. But not to keep on bringing up Piper, but we were talking about reactions to her Pokemon redesigns. And there's a lot of people out there that are throwing a lot of hate her way. And it's just like, it's a Pokemon. Like, deal with it.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the part of the internet that I don't get.
Yeah, me either. You know,
where you invest the time. I invest my time to compliment.
Mm-hmm.
I invest my time to support. If I don't like something, I'm not investing my time to tell them I don't like it because I've invested my time, which is supporting them.
Yeah, the only time that I have done stuff like that, it's been service-based. So, for example, I was coming home on, I want to say, Saturday night on a holiday weekend, and I was taking the ferry, which is part of the Metro Transit system here in the city.
Oh, I saw this tweet.
And there was no bus connection on the other side, and I had to have a 20-minute walk home. And I had just worked all, like, it was a long day, and I was trying to get home, and I was just like, come, like, every other time of the week, doesn't matter whether you're arriving from the ferry that leaves, the ferry leaves the Halifax side at 1:45 and 1:15. And it always lines up with at least a bus or two that are going up towards the main artery in Dartmouth, which is where I live. So it's easy for anybody to get kind of where they're going or at least closer to it. But on a Saturday night, on a holiday weekend, when the bridges close, or well, actually the bridge is open, but usually the bridge would be closed, and that's why the ferries are running, the buses are all over the place. But the bridge is open, which means that everything should be running normally. Like, why isn't there a bus to catch this ferry at, like, it was the 4:15 ferry, so, like, I would have been arriving at around 25 after the hour, and there was no buses within a half an hour. And I can walk home in 20 minutes. And, yes, it's not a far walk, but it's just, it's, you know, it's 9:30 at night, and I just wanted to go home. I was hungry, you know? And, man, but, like, and that, it's not often that I take to Twitter and be like, where the hell is the connection? Dear bus service, thank you very much. You know, but it's like so many more people would safely use Metro Transit if it was more frequent on, one of the biggest drinking nights of the week. You know, if people want to go out and have a good time, you know, why not make the buses more frequent on Saturdays, not less?
You know,
like it just, exactly. That kind of stuff makes very little sense to me. Same thing with, I was complaining one time about the ferry service going, usually there can be points where the ferry goes every 15 minutes. So if you miss one, it's really not a big deal. When it goes every half an hour, it is kind of a pain in the ass. When they close the bridge, it is just my humble opinion that they should run the ferries every 15 minutes. When the bridge is closed, there's really, outside of going all the way down to the other bridge, which is a decent, you know, 10-15 minute bus ride out of your way, so that you don't make any of your connections. It would make a lot more sense just to run the ferry every 15 minutes for everybody in the south end of the city that has to cross the harbor. And they don't do it. And it's just like such a simple thing. And the city gets so much guff over the bridge closing every weekend now. Like, you could solve so much of that bad PR by just adding a ferry. You know, I'm not an alderman. I'm not, you know, involved in the city in any way. I don't know the inner workings. I'm sure there's probably a reason. I don't know whether it's a good one or not. But like, as a citizen, you know, as someone that uses transit, like the common sense of it is lost on me, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we should probably get into the Internet Minute, because I know that you've got a pick to share with everybody. This is, of course, brought to you by tweakedaudio.com. You can visit that website, check out the noise-reducing high-performance earbuds, use the code TCC at checkout for 30% off your entire order and free shipping, which is pretty cool. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code is TCC. What is your pick this week, Hammond?
So my pick is this YouTube list. It's 15 awesome movies you've never heard of. Now, granted, I'm kind of a movie nerd, so there are quite a few of them that I have heard of, but many, many of them I have not seen. And it was interesting because there are foreign films on there, they're just older movies and more obscure films that are well made in that kind of not mass market kind of area. And it goes to prove that there's still really good films that are being made that just, since we're not seeing them crammed down our face on the internet, they're kind of sliding under the radar a lot more frequently than they used to. Because, you know, in the paper days, you could open up the paper and see, oh, these four films are playing at the movie. And what are they about? Here's the synopsis. There's the review. Hey, this one sounds good. But nowadays, it's however you get your information about what's coming. And if it's not a tent pole or a big budget, your theater is probably not going to carry it unless you have a couple really cool art house or smaller theaters around in your area. So anyway, this list of 15, there are quite a few on there that I've put on my list to find and watch. Look through, see if anything strikes your fancy. There are a couple of them that seem a little odd. There's one where the description in the thing says that they have this giant feast, and because of the aftermath of the feast, there is so much aftermath that the pipes in the house break, if you get my drift.
Gross.
Yeah, so there is that in there. But he's like, the guy says, this tells you what the tone of this movie is. So if you're right into that, or if you want to see it, this is it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I watched a few minutes of the video before we started the show, and the first few struck me as kind of odd. I didn't have time to watch the whole thing, but yeah, just there's so many movies out there, as Canadian Netflix will attest, because we don't get the great big blockbusters that you guys get on your Netflix in the States. I have found some hidden gems, and I have also watched 10 minutes of something and going, oh my God, how did this get made? And
yeah, like, I've done. That's on ours too, believe me. I've actually had that happen on some of the Amazon Prime streaming.
Oh, okay.
Where you're like, oh, this looks interesting, and you end up feeling like you are owed 10 minutes from Amazon.
Yeah, like it's so funny how much of a, I don't want to say snob, you know, audience we have become, but like there's just a certain cinematography, film aesthetic, just quality of presentation that...
I think that's more of it than anything else.
Yeah.
If it's put together well, I can watch almost anything. Like, I've watched documentaries about people who build haunted houses in their backyard and loved it. I watched a documentary recently about people who were van enthusiasts, like those 70s custom van enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. That was put together pretty well. It's more of a character study of the people than the actual vans. I watched a documentary about drive-in movie theaters during in the heyday, which was awesome. But I've also watched a lot of stuff that's just garbage. And it's like put together on dad's VHS camcorder, and they're editing it together with tape and scissors. And it's if your presentation is good and it's cohesive, and no matter what the quality looks like, if I can buy into it as and get invested in it, I'll give you the time.
Yeah.
But if it's not, if you didn't take the time to put it together right, I'm not going to give you the time to watch it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's case in point. We all went to go see Batman v Superman.
And, yeah.
You know, like the trailer, all of us were skeptical as to what it was going to be like. A lot of us were right that we didn't like it, but you still knew that at least it wasn't going to be shitty cinematography. Like,
yeah, no, it was going to be very, very lovely. It was going to be very, very Zack Snyder-y with its slow motion and its CG.
Yeah.
And you knew all that going in. There was no secrets about this movie. The only secret for me was how they became friends.
Yeah.
Other than that, I knew what I was getting.
Yeah.
Even the cave troll from Lord of the Rings at the end.
Yeah, I remember that joke we made earlier. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was telegraphed, you know, all well ahead of time, you know. And that's the thing, like, I find that I don't have a lot of time, so unless you can tell me in the first 10 minutes of your movie whether it's going to be at least worth checking out, I'm going to make a quick decision. Like, if I'm sitting down for a meal break, I only have an hour. If I'm watching your hour-long documentary, or if I'm watching the first hour of a movie, if I can't get through the first 10 minutes, I'm going to find something else I like and probably just defer to something that I've already watched a couple of, you know, like season two or three of, you know, whatever. And like, for example, Marco Polo, like when I'm in the mood to watch like a period piece again, Marco Polo, top of the list. Like, I really enjoyed season one. I'm curious about season two. It's a well-done show. So they've got my trust, right? To get in there, I don't envy new franchises and new ideas. Like, it's going to be so hard to get attention if you're doing like indie stuff. I think the thing, I guess, at that point would be to try and get at, like, maybe not a bankable star, but like just somebody that has been in something where people can say, oh yeah, I saw that person in that movie. Like, for example, cool. I watched I can't remember the name of it. About Time, maybe. It was a romantic comedy about a guy that travels in time. And he was one of the kids in the Harry Potter movies. He was like Ron Weasley's older brother or something like that. Played the twins, maybe. Anyway, great actor. But I'd seen him in stuff before. So I was like, yeah, okay. That's who that is. He's all grown up. But at least I know that he's been in some movies. Rachel McAdams, I think, was also in it. I mean, she was in The Notebook. I've seen her and stuff. So I was like, okay, I have no idea who this director is. I've never heard of this movie. It was not on my radar at all. It had come and gone 2 years ago. And I was like, well, I'll give it a go. Turned out, fantastic film. You know, but it's a small budget film shot in Europe, right? Like, it's not a big Hollywood to-do.
But yeah, there's a documentary I saw recently on a off Roku channel about where it followed four high school football players through their college experience and how they had their dreams of going to the NFL. Mm. And it was an amazing documentary. And I never would have found it if it hadn't been for me getting curious about an off, kind of one of these weird Roku channels that pop up. Mm. And having a time to sit and watch the story of these four guys and their success or lack of success during their football careers. And it was amazing. And I am so glad that it was there.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish there was a better way to refer stuff. Like, I mean, how cool would it be if you could send stuff to friends on Netflix?
Yes, that would be awesome.
You know, like, just, and it doesn't have to be another queue. Like, I don't want another My List, because I've got 100 of those things bookmarked already. But, and maybe have it be timed. Like, if you saw a movie or documentary that you thought I would enjoy, like really thought I would enjoy, you could take the time and send it to me and it would pop into My List and it would only be there for like a week. And then my list would just auto delete. And I'd either be forced to email you and be like, hey, what was that thing that you sent me if I missed it? Or watch it within the week. You know, like, I think that would be a really neat social feature in Netflix, you know, because it would be, I would use it a lot with family, because, I mean, my mom's always looking for something cool to watch on Netflix.
Yeah. For instance, I showed Audrey the Secrets, what's it called? Magic's Greatest Secrets Unveiled, the Masked Magician stuff that came out like 95, 96 as Mitch Pileggi as the host and mm-hmm. It's one of those things that Fox was running to kind of be special and edgy. And I showed it to Audrey. She and Sydney sat and watched the entire run on the Sunday before the 4th of July. They just sat and watched Mysteries, Magic's Greatest Secrets Revealed.
Wow.
All day. And they loved it. And I'm glad it was there for them to watch. I'm glad it was something I knew about so I could find it and show it to them. It was great. I mean, thanks to YouTube, I was able to watch Freaky Links again, and mm-hmm. I forgot just how great that show could have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know where. I mean, thinking like I would love an entire Sunday in front of Netflix. What a wonderful break that would be.
Yeah, adult, I don't know if it's possible for us to do that.
No, I was thinking about, yeah, there's either my parents retired. Or your kids, summer off, and school's out. You know, I was like, God damn it.
This adulting thing is for the birds. Stacy was able to power through most of Orange is the New Black on Sunday because she just sat and did laundry. So as she was folding laundry and sorting stuff, she's watching Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to find another decent audiobook. I feel like I would feel like I would be accomplishing more if I could have an audiobook going in my earbuds while I'm drawing. I feel like I would enjoy that a little bit better. I've been trying to finish up my Walt Disney biography. So I have had some park bench time in the last couple of weeks, which has been quite enjoyable. But it's kind of reminded me that I need to do that more. I need to, the problem is like I've got a couple friends and they'll post Instagram pictures of their meals. And they're usually reading a book while they're eating dinner. You know, it's their Tuesday night, whatever. They're just kind of at home getting ready to go to work the next day. And I can't do it. Like I'm a messy eater. So that book is going to be covered in whatever I'm eating. But I don't enjoy reading and eating. Like it's not something, I find the eating very distracting from what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I can't read when I'm on the elliptical. I know lots of people who read when they're on the bikes or on the ellipticals, and I can't do it.
No.
But I've been listening to Ed Catmull. Yeah, he did this thing called Creativity Inc., and it's about the formation of Pixar and how he was working early on and how he was part of the founding members of Pixar and how that kind of evolved and worked and some of the philosophies of how he did it and working with creative people. And it's really good. I've been listening to that for a while now.
That sounds right up my alley.
It's a good book.
Yeah.
No, and the guy reading it has a good voice. I believed it was actually Ed reading his own story for a long time until I looked it up and I was like, oh, okay. But it's believable that he's, because it's written from a first person.
Right. Yeah. No, it makes sense.
So it was at first I was kind of buying the fact that it was Ed, but it wasn't. So it's still really good. The guy reading it's great.
Yeah. One of the 40-hour work week was read by a professional book reader. But even then the smarminess and the cockiness of the guy that wrote the 4-hour work week came through.
Yeah. You know, and I've had experiences that didn't work out. I actually downloaded Yngwie Malmsteen. He's a guitar player. He's got quite a colossal ego from all reports, downloaded his book to read it. And only the intro was read by him. And then they had a reader do the rest of it. And the ego just was not, the voice didn't match the word at all. And I found it kind of off-putting and frustrating. So I just stopped reading. I stopped listening.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of stuff is hard to take. Well, I guess that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. And we are part of Alpha Geek Radio. Check out alphageekradio.com. Or if you're on a mobile device, go to alphageekmedia.com. And there's a web app that you can use to explore the entire network. It's a great way to maybe catch some new shows. The music for the show was composed by Kevin McLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Find us on iTunes. Leave a review. Pop on over to Patreon if you'd like and become a member of our Patreon-only Slack chat. It's a great fun. I find it endlessly entertaining during the week. There was all was a buzz as Star Trek was delivered to Canadian Netflix this week. My phone was going crazy. I was like, oh gosh, what's going on in Slack? I hope it's not anything, you know, too crazy. And it's like, nope, it's Star Trek. And the nerds rejoice. It's pretty fun. So yeah, head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can support the show. I do have some new software I have to pick up in the future, and it's because of you kind people that is something I can afford because of the Patreon. It's there, and it's a magical place to support podcasts and actually other creators too. There's all kinds of cool stuff happening over at Patreon. Outside of that, really the only place I want you to go for me right now is forgepublishing.com. That will take you to the Kickstarter page where you can peruse and possibly choose to support Piper's book. You can also check out PiperThibodeau.com. That's T-H-I-B-O-D-E-A-U.com. And that is a link to everything Piper is up to. It's got the Kickstarter there. It's got her Twitter, Tumblr, DeviantArt, like wherever you like to consume your daily art posts. There's a way to find all the cool stuff that she's doing. So check that stuff out and let me know what you think. I'd love to have some more feedback. Even during the Kickstarter, it's flexible to a point. We can always make little adjustments, you know, going forward. So if you have some ideas, by all means, let me know. Hammond, where can people find you online?
JHammondC.com, @JHammondC on Twitter. Let's see. Beyond the Playlist is on iTunes and Stitcher. Soundography will be launching soon. I think soundography.com is up, but not really fleshed out. I think our logo's there.
Cool.
Last time I saw it anyway, our logo's there. That show should be launching soon. And I'm a proud backer of the Kickstarter, so I can't wait to get my book.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And so does Piper. It's been hard to keep up with sending out thank yous to everybody. So we really, really appreciate it. You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.